How are you today, Gabby? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling me.
Well, it's not much going on right now. Well, listen, when there's no sports and specifically no hockey, you can never go wrong calling someone whose nickname is Gabby. So I'm surprised we actually haven't called you sooner. What does Bruce Boudreaux do in the era of social distancing?
Well, really, not much. I've been sort of, me and my wife, this is our 13th straight day of sort of quarantining ourselves in the house, but there's not a lot going on. And you just try to search the internet, see for anything sports-wise, hockey-wise going on. We've put on some old hockey tapes just to keep interested. But other than that, it's not a lot going on here.
What kind of old hockey tapes would interest Bruce Boudreaux? I'm always curious because I know, like, Bruce, you've forgotten more about the game than I'll ever know. What interests you? Like, when you put on a tape to watch or a DVD to watch, what hockey game is it? What hockey video?
Well, you know what we watched yesterday was the Winter Classic when Washington played Pittsburgh. Stuff you sit back at the home and, you know, you go through things because there's nothing to do. So you're finding little things that you haven't seen in 10 or 15 years when you're walking around the house and opening drawers and stuff. And and that was one of the games we watched, and it was crazy. I wanted to show my son. He keeps asking me about when I played. So I showed him the last game I played against Kalamazoo, I think was 93. We watched that the other day, and then we kept digging and found out in 1981 game where Quebec and Toronto played that I was playing in it. We watched that. So, man, we're picking at straws right now to find something to do.
Berkey, go ahead.
Hey, Gabby. How are you?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
Good, thanks. So we were telling Slapshot stories, and I know you were part of that whole thing, so I'll ask you your recollections. But I was telling these guys, I played against Jeff and Steve Carlson when they were in high school. They're from Virginia, Minnesota. And then I played summer hockey with and against Dave Hansen. Three really good guys that have made a real good living out of one summer shooting a movie.
Yes.
And you tell your little role in this.
Oh, my major part in the movie? you know, actually, I was a member of the Johnstown Jets at the time. And that's the team that the Charlestown Chiefs were were definitely made from. And so, I mean, everybody on the team got a part, but it was the story as it was made. There was a girl by the name of Nancy Dowd. Her brother, Ned Dowd, played for the team a couple years ago, and she was doing a thesis in college, and she did her thesis on a script. She was writing a play, and she stayed with the team for 2 weeks, and she put the movie from being with the team for 2 weeks. But my part was simple. I was just a player, and being sort of the ham that I was back then. There was a couple scenes that I got my face on the movie because George Roy Hill said at one point he said, okay, I'm just going to focus on the net and watching how the Charlestown Chiefs are getting scored on and getting abused and everything. So all I did was circle the net, and my face got on there a few times. But it was a really fun thing to do. I had no idea that 45 years later that it would be such an iconic movie, but it was.
Well, at least there's no alcohol involved in shooting that movie.
Oh my God! Don't let's not talk there.
Hey, I was told a story. I always wanted to ask you about this, Bruce. With the Bruce Boudreaux, I always wanted to ask you about this, Gabby. That scene that you're talking about, where Denis Lemieux is getting lit up, and there's a scene of you're with I think Hyannisport, the green jerseys, and you're behind the net, and there's the shot of Bruce Boudreaux raising his arms as the Chiefs get scored on. I was told that you, in that scene, just kept circling around and around the net just to make sure that you somehow got in the movie. Is that true?
That's 100% true. 100%. I mean, the play was in zone, and they were supposed to, just show that Johnstown or Charleston was always, defending. But I never left the crease. I just kept circling the net and circling the net. And at the end, the puck comes to me. I put it in the net, and I raise my hand. And that's my credit. I scored a goal in the movie.
And so George Roy Hill, he had worked with Paul Newman and Cool Hand Luke, right? And Martin Struther.
And the Sting, too.
And the Sting, yeah, that's right.
And I think he did Butch Cassidy. I'm not sure, but I think he did Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid with Redford and Newman. And Newman as well.
Let me get one more slapshot question, and then I'm going to turn it over to Justin Bourne. The Struther Martin character, okay?
Yes.
Joe McGrath. Based loosely or tightly on Johnny Mitchell, who would have been the GM of Johnstown. How close to Joe McGrath was John? How close to John Mitchell was Joe McGrath?
Oh, he was. He was Johnny Mitchell. 100%. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know about the stories about him being in the penalty box and stuff, but as he acted towards our team and the fiscal responsibility that he had was right up there.
Fiscal.
That's
Bruce, my boy is 3.5 years old. How old should he be when I first show him Slapshot?
20.
Oh, it depends. That's a tough question. I think I was showing my kids at 7, and they still talk that way to this day.
That's great. Well, I'll take us out of the Slapshot stories, as fantastic as they are. I still think it's the all-time greatest movie I've ever seen, so I'm just going to leave it at that. One of the things we were talking about before break was the draft. Brian Burke was giving us some stories of some guys who were great at their interviews, Gabriel Landeskog being someone who's fantastic. They had some more challenges with Neil Yakupov. I wonder if any interviews that you did over your time in hockey stand out in a particularly positive or negative way.
Like there was no draft interviews when I was being drafted or anything. We never got a chance ever to talk to management. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you're talking about interviews in general or at the draft, but when my draft year, we didn't even have a place to go. It was a telephone draft, and there was 2 years there that they didn't want the WHA to know who was being drafted, I think is the way the story goes, and so they did it by telephone, and you just had to wait at home. But we never got any pre-draft interviews as such. I remember talking to my agent, who was Bill Waters at the time, and he would tell me where you were ranked or where you were rated, and then you sat at home and you waited for the call.
So would head coaches not sit in at the draft on the interviews?
No. Oh, I mean, okay.
Back then,
the teams that
not.
I
back then
the
not.
Teams
okay.
that I've been on. We didn't get to sit in on them. I don't know if Brian had his head coach sit on the meetings when they did the combines and talk to the kids at all. I never got that opportunity.
Part of the problem was the coaches had their meeting in the one day. You guys had a meeting, Gabby, the day before the draft or the day of the draft when we were talking to kids. But otherwise, my recollection is the coaches were welcome. This goes back... I was never drafted, but this goes back when my first year working for Pat, so 87. Even for that draft, the next year was when we drafted Trevor Linden. We flew 7 kids in and did a battery of psychological and physical tests, including Trevor never got tested. You've heard that story. But Mike Modano, Curtis Lecision. So it goes back at least to 87, but your draft year was before that, Gabby.
Yeah, no, mine was 75, and they didn't have anything like that. And as a coach, when I started in 2007, I was never George invited me to the combine 1 year, and I don't think I sat in on interviews with players that year, but that was the only year I went to the combine, and it was in Toronto. Bob Murray or Chuck or Paul, with those GMs, I never got a chance to get in the interview stage with the players.
So who called
you? And rightfully so. They're 18 years old, and
sure.
you know, I probably wasn't going to see them for a couple years anyway.
I'm curious who called you. Like, you're a third-round pick in 1975. Would it have been Bill Waters? Would it have been someone from the Maple Leafs? How did you find out you were drafted?
Well, I was sitting at home with my dad in the basement, and the phone rang a lot. It took a lot longer for that phone to ring than I really wanted it to ring. But I think I answered it, and I think it was a secretary in Alan Eagleson and Bill Waters' office that told me, because she sounded really excited that I was a third-round pick, and she couldn't understand how, like, utterly disappointed I was, and it was like, oh, okay, Bill will be talking to you later. And then that was it.
I never got drafted, but and before my senior year, the Philadelphia Flyers listed me. You used to be able to go list college players that you missed in the draft. And that's how the Flyers got my rights. I sailed right through the draft. There's no discussion about that.
Well, and how many rounds was it back then? 12 or something? 12,
yeah, 13? Even more, probably 20, and I didn't get drafted.
Yeah. Well, you've done quite well for yourself, Mr. Burke.
Thank you.
Yeah, no one's crying for Brian here. Brian's done very well, to your point, Bruce. With Bruce Boudreau, when I look at your career, we'll see if we have time here to get into the coaching, but when I look at your playing career, would I be wrong in saying, and you can pick which year it was, one of those Marlboro's teams you played on in junior hockey was the best team you ever played on?
I would have to say so, yeah. I mean, excuse me, you can look at it two ways. The first Memorial Cup team in 72-73, we lost seven games all year. The last Memorial Cup team we played on, we scored 458 goals or something. And I mean, we averaged almost 10 goals a game at home. It's a true story. And I mean, you had guys like Mark Napier, John Tinelli, John Smirk, John Anderson, Mike Kosicki. I mean, these guys, we could score with as well as anybody. But the overall team, I think the 72 team with Mark Howe and Glenn Goldup and Peter Marin and Bob Daly and Mike Pommettier was the best team that I was on. And the great story about that team was we played, almost the whole team played together the year before in Junior B. There was no Tier 2 back then. And we lost four games during the course of the year, and I think 13 players moved up to play on the next team next year. And so we were all together, but we had like some great players growing up in Toronto at that point. I was really fortunate to play with some of those guys.
So let me ask you a question, Gavin. We've had a bunch of head coaches on the last week. We asked them all about their path, how they got to be an NHL head coach. What was your first coaching job?
My first coaching job was Muskegon. A new league was formed called the Colonial Hockey League in 1994. And I went back then as a player. I was 37 years old, and I kept going to the drafts every year. And this draft was in Quebec, and Larry Gordon came up and asked me if I wanted to coach a new expansion team in Muskegon. And I was sitting there going, and they offered me a 3-year deal. And I'd been, since I've been 30 years old, been going on 1-year deals in hockey. And I knew that the 1 year that I didn't score 80 or 100 points was the year I was never going to get another job again. So when somebody offers you a 3-year deal, you jump at it. It's something that I'd wanted to do. And I'd been a player assistant coach in Fort Wayne for 2 years. And same thing with the Leafs, when I was in St. Catharines, I was player assistant coach. And so it was something I wanted to do. And I said, I better either take this opportunity or forget about it, because you never know when the opportunities are going to arise. So that was my first shot at coaching in Muskegon.
But you had been a player, coach, head coach, or a player assistant coach?
I was a player assistant coach up to that point. And being very fortunate is that there was never a time of no job. I went right from player to coach, and there was there was never, you know, sort of a, oh my God, what am I going to do? Maybe I got to get into coaching or something like that. I never missed a season, which was really lucky for me.
Well, you were a great minor league player. Like, people didn't get a chance to see you play. You were a phenomenal. I remember watching you play. You were awesome skill level and compete level. Anyway, so how long in Muskegon?
I was 1 year in Muskegon, and then I went right back to the International League into Fort Wayne the next year, and coached in Fort Wayne for 2 years. It's funny how things happen. The first year I win the Coach of the Year, we go to the finals. The second year is a lockout year in the NHL. I'm fired at Christmas. the third year, went to San Francisco as an assistant coach. Assistant GM was Jean Perron. That team lasted 1 year. And then I'm sitting at home and in St. Catharines at this point, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. And Steve Bartlett helped me get a job in I told my wife at the time, I says, you know what? The only job that's opening in the East Coast League is in Mississippi. Do you want to go to Mississippi and coach hockey? Because they knew nothing about hockey there. And we went there for 3 years, had a tremendous time. The people were awesome. We averaged almost 8,000 people a game there. And I was affiliated with LA at the time. And after the third year when we won the championship, Bill O'Flaherty and Dave Taylor interviewed me. And then I got their American League job in Lowell. And then when that tenure ended, went to Hershey. And when got called up to the NHL from there, and I've been here ever since.
So how many one more question for Gabby.
Yeah.
How many years, including your first year in Muskegon, how many years coaching and pro in the minors before you got your first head job?
94 to 2007, 13 years coaching in the minors, and then last 12 years in the NHL.
And some of our listeners would be shocked that it took a coach of your caliber that long. That's what we're trying to bring out with these stories is it ain't that easy to get an NHL head coaching job.
Oh, my God. No, there's only 31 of them, and I was 53 years old when I got my first opportunity to coach in the NHL, and I had almost given up on that opportunity. As a matter of fact, it was funny. When I got the call from George to go up there, my first question to him was, because it was as an interim head coach, I said, okay, that's great. I'll come up here and, you know, and did cartwheels getting there, but do I still have my job in Hershey when you hire a real coach? That was my most concern. And because I had just signed a four-year deal to coach in Hershey, and I wanted to make sure that a lot of times you get an interim job and you're out, and then they've already hired another guy in the minors and you're sort of out of the organization. And I didn't want that to happen to me. So,
yeah, that's a lot like the Scott Gordon situation from Lehigh Valley a year ago. But they put him right back there.
Yeah, and that's because Chuck is such a good guy. A lot of guys wouldn't do that, but Chuck is a pretty loyal and good guy, and that's what he did.
Let's get last question in for Justin Bourne. Go ahead, Bourne.
I'm just wondering if you know, looking back at all those different experiences from, you know, throughout the minors, throughout all those different places that you've been around the U.S., what's changed in hockey that you miss? I just feel like when I look back at when I watch hockey in the 80s and 90s, it was more open, free-flowing, and like you would have coached differently. What was better about hockey that's changed today?
I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's better or worse, but one of the things I liked, and I understand the reasoning, is I liked the buildings. Like if you went into the Boston Garden, for example, and it's a small building, small ice surface, and they built their team around that, and then you could go into to Edmonton where it was free flowing. I like all the things about the buildings that the teams and the GMs would say, okay, this is the kind of home building we got. Let's build our team to that kind of arena. And that I missed. I miss seriously. I was never a physical player, but I miss the amount of physicalness that's sort of gone out of the game, and that a really good body check sort of means you have to fight a guy. I don't get that But I understand the way people are these days. But I miss the fact that it is as physical as it was back then. And when you were a hockey player in the 70s, 80s, 90s, I guess, even in the early 2000s, we took an awful lot of pride in how tough we were. And so if you could take a kicking back then and still come back and go to the front of the net to score a goal, I miss that sort of reputation that hockey players had. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I agree.
I can, even though I'm not right beside you, Brian, I know you're smiling deeply and richly hearing Bruce Boudreau talk like that.
And that's a high-skill guy, unlike me. Gabby was a high-skill guy, and he's lamenting that we've lost some of the iron in the game.
I hear you.
That's my dog.
That's okay. I got one behind me right now, hoping he doesn't wake up. He's having a nap as well. Gabby, we're heavy on time. We got to hustle. Thanks so much for stopping by, Bruce. We'll be checking in regularly and enjoy more vintage games with your wife, sir.
I will. And thanks for calling. It's great talking to you guys. Hope to see you in the future.